Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw. And with me this week, we got the crew back. It's Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
We have Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And completing his trip through the comic book podcast circuit is Mr. Turn Up Charlie Ridgely is back with us.
What's going on, guys?
And as you guys are probably, if you're watching this live right now, you probably are hyped as we are for the big movie release of today. We have a big movie release. It's Godzilla versus Kong.
The MonsterVerse climax
that we've all been waiting for. Now that it's out on HBO Max, we are going to talk about the film. We're going to try to do kind of a review. We'll get into a little bit of spoilers, but we'll try to keep it mostly spoiler-free and try to talk some vagary around this, because I know as we're recording this and doing this live, a lot of you have not had a chance to log on and watch it yet. So we'll try to keep that on the safer side while just telling you what we thought and having some arguments about what went down in this movie. So we're going to do that. We've also got to review the new Robert Kirkman series, Invincible, on Amazon. That just dropped its first batch of episodes over the weekend, so we got to talk about that. We got to touch on what's going on in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and we got to talk comics. So, you know, this big geek podcast has a bunch of geek stuff we got to do today, so let's get to it right at the top. So, let's talk about Godzilla versus Kong. So, I got to see this in the theater. Charlie, you got to see this in the theater. We were lucky enough to go out and see this. Matt, I know you're streaming it like as we speak.
I watched it, yeah.
Oh, you right got before
the
nice.
Right before the show. I skipped a couple parts in the middle because I needed to make sure to get to the last bit, but hey, we're good.
I mean, that's
will
okay.
Will you rewatch it?
Will I rewatch it? Actually, yeah, but no, we'll get to why.
All right, so cool. So how we're going to do this is we are going to talk about the movie, but let's try to keep it kind of spoiler free. I know that's a hard challenge, so I guess I will.
It's easy for me since I missed 25%.
It's all right. So
you went from some scenes in the middle to a whole quarter of the movie. It's like 30 seconds.
Not gonna lie, I was on time.
Matt's keeping it real today. All right,
I watched the trailer. We're good.
So Godzilla vs. Kong. I've been a big fan of the MonsterVerse since this kind of concept started. I didn't love the first Godzilla, but I didn't hate it. I'm a big fan of Kong Skull Island. I love that film. It's still, I think, my favorite of the MonsterVerse, but I think this is a close second. Godzilla vs. Kong, at the very least, delivers what it says it's going to deliver, which is Godzilla versus Kong. And so you get that, and you get a pretty good amount of fight from these two titans, several rounds that go through, and it's exciting stuff when they fight. That was my whole thing. Would this be actually exciting to see these two giant CGI monsters kind of duke it out? And it is. Their fight mechanics are probably some of the most interesting in the MonsterVerse. And the spectacle is thrilling when they do rumble. And it takes center stage. And it's definitely captivating and entertaining. So you get that. So at the very least, it does what it says it's going to give you. Godzilla versus Kong. There are some things I didn't love. Nobody loves the human story of the MonsterVerse ever. And I feel like Kong Skull Island still has, if not the strongest human story, the best human characters I like are still in that movie. This one, thankfully, has a lot of very talented people kind of carrying the stupid human part. You got like Alexander Skarsgård, Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Millie Bobby Brown, and Julian, what's his name from Charlie, you're muted.
Julian Dennison.
Yeah, Dennison from Deadpool 2 and Hunt for the Wilder People. And So all together as an ensemble, they do a pretty good job of carrying the human portions and making that stuff kind of at least bearable. I mean, but it is just filler to what we want to see, which is the main event. Now, That's my good part. My bad part is I have real problems with the actual Godzilla versus Kong fight of this. Not the actual visuals or the excitement, but just how that goes down and what the quote unquote resolution of that is feels a little bit hackneyed and just at odds with the rest of the story. It feels like we get a really good kind of character story for one of these titans and not so much the other, but there is this weird thing that happens in this fight that just feels like a studio or two came in and were like, we have notes. Here's how the fight's got to go. They got to have this. We got to have that. And this is what we're going to want in the end. And it's just like, okay. And that's just kind of what you get. So there's going to be a lot of debate online about who
it's
won.
It's not fair that you're like, we're not going to talk spoilers. And then you have this big, giant, like, hot take issue with, like, the most spoilery part of the movie.
I'm not going to say
and then, like, we
about
can't
it.
Argue about it. But, like, I could disagree with you completely, but I can't bring it up because I can't talk about why.
I thought you were going to be on my side about this. I thought you and I came out of this on the same side of what happened in this fight. And
I mean, but I don't care about, like, the, does there have to be a specific, this is the one thing that's happened. It's kind of ambiguous, and I dug that. I think there are some times where it moved a little too quick there at the end, but, like, I think it delivered, and there was one Titan that got a lot more story than the other. I think that was the purpose. I think one of them was the hero of the story, and it just didn't, like, I don't think it all of a sudden ended with this different take of that. Like, it delivered on what it set up.
No, I think you're right, but I think that it did something arbitrarily. That's what I mean by, like, hackneyed. It's like, it did something arbitrarily just to give status to kind of both sides of this and let people rep for this. And we know there are going to be a lot of people repping for this, and there's going to be a lot of debate about this. And I think they knew that coming out of it, that this was going to still not, like, it's not like going to end on a, everybody's happy with the outcome and everybody's agreed upon in the answer. The guys.
Oh yeah. It very clearly does not have my bigger issue was with Adam Wingard coming out and saying, oh, there's definitely a clear winner when it's all said and done. That's my bigger issue, not the movie itself. Like,
no, that's like the thing about just delivering on this, like, main event that we have to, like, that people are going to be arguing about is my big problem with the movie, because otherwise you take that kind of off the table as an obligation. And it's just a really good story about these two characters and how they collide. So all in all, I see people in the comments saying, you know, that, you know, Janelle won't be disappointed. There's some plot holes, but generally it seems like people enjoyed Godzilla versus Kong. So yes, this will be spoil free. We're not going to spoil it for you. A lot of you have to still see it.
It's an enjoyable thing to watch, so go see it.
Matt, how did you feel on your fast forward viewing?
So actually what's crazy is, so I don't know if it was quite 25%, but there was literally like the bridge between, and I can't say where, so I'm trying to, like, be careful. I watched over 50% of the first chunk of the movie, and then I had to skip a chunk in between to get to the other thing. So you will know where I'm at. So, like, there are probably points I have, like, no context for. I'm like, what the
I'm heck? Just wondering, I we can't talk about it now because of spoilers, but, like, yes. To me, one of the most important things in the movie is, like,
probably
right in the middle of the movie.
Oh, probably. My gosh.
Probably. Okay. So just take what I say with a grain of salt. And that's why, really, honestly, I'm not even getting into the, like, who was the winner debate, because, like, I don't feel like I have the necessary context to say that or get into that. What I will say is, for at least, I've seen a lot of people, and understandably so, because the first movies in this MonsterVerse, I agree with Kofi, Kong Skull Island is hands down my favorite of these movies. It's the one that has heart. It's the one that has, like, characters that I could actually grasp onto and actually felt for. The other ones were disposable cannon fodder for the most part. So that movie kind of stands alone, which is why I was excited for this. I could honestly, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, I could care less about Godzilla. this movie could be Kong versus the toaster, and I would watch it, mostly because it's Kong. That is the reason I'm in this, which is why I was actually quite surprised, actually, and delighted that, like, there's a lot of Kong in this movie. I really thought he would be more sidelined, and he's not, thankfully, at least in the portions that I watched. So there's all the heart is in his scenes. Like, it's all this, and I didn't mind the human characters as much. There's one storyline with a couple of characters that, like, I could take or leave it's fine. Like Kofi said, they're talented, and that's good. But like, I didn't really need it. But the core story surrounding Kong and those key characters that are part of his journey, I really liked, and I was invested, and it had those moments that I loved from Skull Island. And so that I was very surprised by, honestly, because I didn't necessarily see that coming. The fight, the end fight, is fun. Like, it's kind of what you expect. And I thought I saw it not on a giant screen, on a monitor, watching it on HBO Max. And honestly, it didn't really take away from just like, oh, this is cool action. So even people who are streaming will still get something out of it, even though it's not all dazzling and sparkly like on a big screen. So I dug it. I mean, I came away liking a lot more than I didn't like. Again, I will go back and fill in the blanks and see how I feel about how things end, if there's a clear winner, things like that. But I dug it. I dug it.
All right. Before we get out of here, let me just go around to you guys who have seen it. And even Janelle, you know, if you want to answer, do you think this should be the culmination, or do you want to see this MonsterVerse continue?
Well, my question, I'll just go first because I haven't watched it yet, but I'm very excited to. The first question I have really quickly is, do we need to know, does everybody have to have already watched all of the movies leading up to it? And if so, like, is it like a multiverse type thing where these movies all come together? And if so, how would the future ones fit in with this one? Or
you're asking a lot of complicated questions for a very simple franchise.
Like, this is the fourth movie. It's not like this is Avengers Endgame. Like,
right.
This is the fourth movie in the series.
Yeah, it's just a fourth movie.
But you can enjoy it without
Kong
seeing
destroyed
any
some
other.
Stuff. Oh, Godzilla yeah. destroyed some stuff. Godzilla destroyed some more stuff. With like Rodan and Ghidorah, and now it's Kong and Godzilla destroying stuff together.
Good, because I don't even know if I saw the other ones. Truly.
I mean, I don't know what you were doing in Russia since the
Me Too. It's good though that if you did see them, they left that much of an impression.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would like to see more because my motto is more content. So yes, I would like to see more of this monster world and
really,
and
really embracing
characters.
The 21st century, Janelle.
We need to get you a shirt that says
more
that.
Content.
No, I'm working on some stuff, guys.
Yeah.
I love when we call films content.
We're not promoting your content.
That's good stuff.
Guys, listen here, boys. Charlie, what do you want to say?
I mean, I don't need more. I'm with Matt on the Godzilla thing. I don't really care about Godzilla all that much, but I think Kong is a really, really interesting character, and they show that with this, like him being the protagonist essentially, and how he can have a soul and a story and a growth. I really dug that. I would love to see more of his story. I think that there's a lot to explore with him post this movie. I think the Godzilla stuff kind of feels resolved. Like taking my feelings about Godzilla away, it kind of feels like there's like, okay, like there is resolution with where Godzilla's tale kind of comes to an end. Where Kong kind of, I think, opens for more things. And I think part of that too is just how Adam Wingard brought Kong to life. He felt like a human and he had a really interesting story. You know, Adam Wingard was supposed to make a Kong movie when Universal had the rights to Kong after Peter Jackson. And I think he really kind of took that and ran with it in this. He took that concept and really, you know, brought Kong to life in an interesting way. So another Kong movie would be awesome. I don't know how much more MonsterVerse stuff I need, but I'd absolutely watch another Kong movie.
All right. I mean, I think it's been interesting, if not perfect in its execution. But yeah, I think Kong Skull Island is still my example of how you can do some of these movies, and they don't even have to be crazy big budget, and they can still be really good and kind of really fun. So there are things that I want to talk spoilers so bad, but just some of the places we get introduced to in this, I would like to see more of the movies set in those areas and things like that. And kind of leave the.
I mean, we know
human
it has Hollow
cities.
Earth. We can say Hollow
okay.
Earth. We know
okay,
that it,
yeah.
like that's been out in the open. We know they go to Hollow Earth. Like
so, yeah. I want more Hollow Earth exploration, journey to the center of the Earth type stuff. That stuff would be cool. And the stuff that's in here from this movie is cool. I don't need to see like a Pacific Rim clone, the coastal cities being like, oh my god, again. Like we've seen that enough, right? But I would like to see it kind of taken into a real, full, actual MonsterVerse because. The concepts you can play with down there are cool. And yeah, I would love to see more of that. But check out Kong Skull Island. It's on HBO Max. Tell us what you think. Yeah, we want to know. So we're going to move right along. Hiya. And I'm probably sure Rich wants me to take a break sooner before later. But we'll keep going maybe. All right, no, we just need to take a break. We got to take a break. Fine, we got to take a break, pay these bills, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Robert Kirkman's Invincible and Falcon and Winter Soldier and what's going on in Marvel DC Comics. Stay tuned for all of that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We are back. So let's talk about Invincible. This is the new Amazon adult animated series based on Robert Kirkman's comic series Invincible. And it dropped just like The Boys. Amazon did this thing where it dropped 3 episodes to start, kind of get you into it. And then we'll go weekly and kind of see it. This kind of flew under the radar for me because I'm not like the biggest Kirkman fan. The Walking Dead, I did love that comic and I love the series up until about this last week. We'll get into that in a minute. But I wasn't really familiar with Invincible, so I was kind of excited. And I mean, I didn't know anything. I didn't follow any of the marketing to this too much. And so I just kind of got into this fresh. And after 3 episodes, I'll say I really liked it. It's like watching a very adult, twisted version of like the 2000s DC Justice League cartoon, which is like one of my favorite of all times. And this is that, but like I said, very Kirkman in its adult violence, language, and even kind of sexual situations and all that stuff. But it actually works out. It actually functions almost like an animated version of The Boys at the same time, but a little bit more traditional superhero without just being completely snarky about superheroes. So it is a good addition to Amazon's lineup as they're building out kind of a more adult superhero universe. And I thought it was good. I was surprised by the voice cast. I did a lot of that X-ray pausing on Amazon to see, because I was like, oh man, I know these voices. Like,
right.
Like, yeah. I didn't follow the marketing. So Steve Young, Sandra Oh, like, I mean, J.K. Simmons is, you always know it's him. That's not a surprise for anybody. But like John Hamm's in there.
It's like, well, half the Walking Dead cast is on it.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. So excited. Which
Ross Marquand voices every other character.
Yeah. Ross Marquand, Kahari. I mean, but they do that stuff and those guys are talented and you already know them. So you might as well save some money and get them to do it for you. But yeah. But yeah, Invincible was good. I didn't know anything, like I said, about the hook, about the story or anything. And so the first episode, I was just kind of like, oh yeah. And I was like a little worried about my viewing experience until you get to like that last 10 minutes of it. And you're like, oh, this is Kirkman. Like, okay, like now we're going to hit a turn. And it's like, yeah. And it just quickly takes a big turn. And then from there, I really loved it. And yeah, this is an exciting series. This was an unexpected gem, kind of like The Boys. I wasn't familiar with these comics and like the series adaptations. I'm enjoying a lot more than I thought I would.
That's kind of why I hope that like The Boys, because that show did drive people to go read the books, right? They ended up doing smartly a bunch of collected editions and things like that surrounding the first season. And then with the hype for season 2, there's a lot more people like kind of diving into the books just to see kind of, you know, even the show tames a few things from the comics, even though season 3 is going to introduce one big character that we haven't gotten there. Right. So I was kind of hoping the same would be true for Invincible. And I agree with Kofi. Like the first thing I thought probably 3 minutes into that opening sequence was, oh man, this is Justice League. And man, I miss Justice League. Like, I was very much like, I need to go pop in Justice League Unlimited. Like, I need to go watch that. But then, of course, you get the Kirkman flavor, which, you know, I'm hit and miss with Kirkman. Like, I like Invincible and I liked Walking Dead. And I like some of his other things too. And then, of course, you know, you have like Die, which it's over the top. It's too far. So, like, this is kind of a perfect balance. It's some of the edginess and ridiculousness of the concept, but reined in just enough. And Invincible kind of strikes that balance in the comics a lot. And so here, I thought they did a really good job. I wasn't sure how I felt about the animation about midway through the first episode, but like once you get into 2 and 3 and everything kind of starts to gel, like I felt that way too about some of the voices. I was like, I don't know. Like, I love J.K. Simmons, but I was like, I don't know if he's Omni-Man. Like, I don't know. I'm not getting that vibe yet. And then like once we get past there, I have to say, and I cannot for the life of me remember, I'm blanking on his character name, but Mantzoukas is phenomenal in this show. He's so good. So just props to that. But I dug it a lot. Like, I binged those three pretty much back to back, and it was not because I had to. I actually could have just postponed it till this morning.
You didn't skip the middle of the episode.
I didn't skip the middle of the episode. I ran out of time. But like, you know, it was one of those things. Like, I actually wanted to watch this all the way, and like, I was bummed when I got to the end of the third episode. I hope it gets a second season.
Yeah, me too. Especially since they're like a good 45 minutes a piece. I was like, they are like really in-depth episodes, each one. And
yes, Jackie Chan Adventures in the comments. That's a great
Shout out. Shout out to that. But yeah, Walton Goggins is in there. There's everybody in here. Rexplode is his name.
Thank you.
Yeah. So funny.
Yeah. So yeah. Janelle, let's go to you.
Yeah, I loved it. It was really awesome. I binged it as well. I did not read the comics, so I didn't have context. I don't watch anime, and I don't really watch a lot of animated anything really. So really no expectations whatsoever, other than the fact that I am obsessed and I have, this is a throwback, but like Glenn is back, ladies and gentlemen, from The Walking Dead. Glenn is my favorite character. So I usually don't ever let that die, but he voices, you know, the main kid hero.
And you did let him die.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and which brings me to my next point, exactly what you said, Kofi. I, you know, it's just a tradition. It's a cute, it seems like a wholesome hero story until the very end of the first episode, and we get like zombie guts, blood, gore. It's intense and very graphic for a cartoon or an animated show. And I was like gobsmacked. I was just, like, my fiance walked in and I was like, I was just freaking. I was just totally shocked. And that hooked me in. I was ready to go. And watching the next two episodes from that point forward was just like, give me more content. I need this. I didn't mean to throw that in there again. Sorry, guys. But give me more. I think that just honestly, I love Steven Yeun so much. And he did such a good job. And I'm intrigued to see where it goes from here. I want to know where the story is headed. And I don't know for sure if you guys are familiar. I wanted to ask you if you have read the comic books, do they spoil the TV show? If you guys know at all.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, okay. Like they always.
So it's definitely based on the same story.
But this one very much so. This one, compared to some of the other adaptations we have, mm-hmm. This is so far pretty spot on, pretty beat for beat.
Cool.
They're not taking a bunch of big swerves yet. So far, yes, it's very much kind of like early Walking Dead in that respect, where like you read the book, you knew exactly what was happening, and then they just decided to like swap out characters and kill people.
That's
part of what reminds me. I was going to bring up when you're talking about the animation that there are things about this show that feel very anime to me. I don't think it's not styled like an anime throughout. Like, it's not, you know, taking those things, but like specifically like when they fly, when they hit, you know, when they take off and fly, like the animation that goes behind them of like the jet stream and stuff like that, that instant, like that quick thing feels very anime. A lot of it kind of comes from One Punch Man. I feel a lot of similarities there. But the other thing that really ties it to anime for me is like the loyalty to the source material. Like a lot of times in anime, you'll see it be like frame for frame from a manga.
Just don't ask about the Promised Neverland or Tokyo.
That's awesome.
But I mean, you know, a lot of like, I mean, look at My Hero. When you look at like Attack on Titan, there's a lot of those, especially in early seasons, they really feel very loyal to the original source material. And Invincible, in a lot of ways, you know, reminds me of that. And I think that it's an interesting place to put a Kirkman, you know, superhero tale, especially when it gets really bloody, like the way the colors pop, like the edges, not the edgy material, but like the actual physical edges of the animation, you know, really work. Like you talked about Justice League, like imagine if Bruce Timm stuff was really gory. Like that's a kind of cool idea there. I'm glad it hooked me at the end of the first episode, because I was really not all that into it before that. Like it was a fine story.
I think they really,
whatever, it works. And then it really gets you kind of.
Yeah, I think they really do that, set you up for that big, just to smack you with that twist at the end of the first episode for everybody who doesn't know. I want to bring up with something Half-Sen Josh brought up in the comments, which is, I feel like this was way under marketed as well. Like, I watch a lot of Comedy Central. I mean, we're on Twitch all the time. Like, we have Amazon Fire Stick in every room of my house. And I feel like I didn't really know this show was arriving until somebody just mentioned it, like, Friday. Or, like, it wasn't even, I don't feel like it was trending. I just feel like somebody offhandedly just was like, yeah, Invincible. And I was like, what? And I was like, oh, it was Charlie. And, like, I was reading Charlie's streaming article and it was like, Amazon's Invincible's today. And I was like, oh, I probably wouldn't watch that. You know, instead of
I feel like they did
Justice League again.
I feel like they did the same thing though with season one of The Boys. Like, you knew it was premiering, but like, you didn't, it wasn't everywhere, and it wasn't everywhere until people saw those first few episodes, and then the word of mouth started buzzing, and then you saw more advertisements for it.
I will say on Twitch,
season two was huge, like they just kept hitting.
It was advertised on Twitch quite a bit, because
Invincible, or The Boys?
The Boys, but not Invincible. Like,
y'all
no opportunity.
Follow Robert Kirkman on Twitter, because
right,
and, I was very aware of Invincible.
Well, true.
Because he's been tweeting a lot about it.
Yes. Yeah, that's a big ask. That's a real big ask, though. Like,
that was just a joke thing. They have Amazon's very weird about their advertising. Like,
yeah,
but I think that's part of it. Invincible is a very It's popular. It's actually extremely popular within comic circles. It's a very much like, if you're a comic fan, you probably know of Invincible, and it has a big popularity within that market. But it's not, you know, it had breached kind of outside of that. So yes, comic circles, I feel like people knew. Like, people knew this was coming. You follow the different people and you're knowledgeable that it's coming. But far as like, if Anissa had just picked up the fire thing, you know, like the like
the
turned
fire
on the thing,
old fire man, thing,
whatever. I can't remember which one I have. So like the fire.
Anissa thing, hadn't started a fire in the living room. None of this would have happened.
And like popped it up. She wouldn't necessarily know that like Invincible's premiering today. Whereas if you see other shows, like there's no missing it. You're going to see an ad.
And I really think part of that is the home of these shows and how they choose to advertise. You know.
Yes, the fire.
For whatever reason, Amazon is very strange about how they advertise original programming. You know, like we mentioned The Boys and Invincible, but like even their movies, you know, you saw a lot of stuff about like One Night in Miami once awards circuit started, you know, in a lot of the awards places where, you know, in certain TV channels, you'd see ads for that. The only thing I can remember really like being shoved down your throat ahead of its release from Amazon was Borat. That's the only thing I can remember like actually being advertised everywhere. And now The Boys season two was different because everyone already loved the show and they really went in. I think Without Remorse at the end of April with Michael B. Jordan, I think that's going to get some real heavy promotion.
Yeah, that's already Michael started. I've seen those commercials like several times already. Those are already. Yeah. And they know the name recognition. But I'm saying Bezos couldn't wrap my boxes in some Invincible tape or something, like, just to let me know, like when it's coming through the door, like, hey, watch this. But I mean, we're not going to get to the bottom of it. I don't want to get too off track with that. I just thought it was strange. But hopefully it'll be like The Boys and word of mouth will carry it, because I think it is very much it is engrossing. Like, I'm going to be there every Friday now, like Falcon and Winter Soldier. Then I want to see Invincible, because like, yeah, I'm in now, and I want to keep this going. So, guys, help us out. Check out Amazon Invincible on Amazon Video if you have not yet. It's by Robert Kirkman, the guy who did The Walking Dead. And, it's a twisted adult superhero story. It's pretty cool. So check that out. Moving right along, let's talk about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We're not going to get too deep on this. We have an entire Marvel podcast, Phase Zero, with Brandon Davis on Fridays, where Charlie just broke down a lot of what we're talking about in this latest episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah, you were on last Friday, right? I'm not like crazy. Yeah. You stuck up for that guy against that crazy man you guys led on talking about the DC universe.
Oh, Matt Berry's my favorite.
I know. Yeah, he's that. Funny. I like Matt Berry. He's hilarious. Shout out to Matt Berry. Yeah, we're gonna get him on this show so we can maybe verbally abuse him if he's down for that. if he's down.
The long and short of it, if you didn't watch Phase Zero or listen to Phase Zero, he came on and it's about Marvel, but he did a lot of DC hate. And it was a bit, like, it was fun, but it was very, like, you know, that's the context to
No,
all
it was
of this.
Kind of a bit. It wasn't a bit.
I think that the feelings were there, but then the bit was the bit, you know? But that's what we're talking
legally,
about.
Legally, we had to say, this is a bit. No, but I'm just kidding. But no, shout out to Matthew Berry. We'd love to have him on and argue this stuff, because we are just an argumentative bunch anyway. But, yeah, let's talk about Falcon and Winter Soldier Episode 2. Basically, I just wanted to mention... I wrote a piece about this, but how surprised I am that Marvel is getting so real about so many things in these shows. Not just Falcon Winter Soldier, but WandaVision's kind of subtext about, you know, just everything from, you know, female like roles over the decades and agency and grief and mental health and all that stuff. Like, that was some serious subtext. And this one is just, I mean, it's even more pronounced. It's talking about race, politics, and just so many things that they didn't even know would be timely now about, like, symbols for America and, you know, anxieties about medical history and experiments and kind of things getting injected into you and stuff that we're kind of dealing with right now. But yeah, the second episode was really a powerful kind of one. First of all, he actually gave us the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which was a nice change. And, the story of Isaiah Bradley, the Black Captain America, and bringing up and referencing Marvel's Truth, Red, White, and Black, which we have an excellent piece on by our own Aaron. And you should check that out, too. But, I was surprised that they went into it that deep and even had like followed that up with a police scene. And I was like, wow, Marvel's just hitting all the beats. Like, we're really just recapping all of 2020 right now. Like, let's just go through it. But to me, I know some people don't agree, and that's fine. Each person can have their own opinion, but I like that Marvel is adding an element of something real to these at least long form stories. I agree with you guys in the sense that I should be able to go sometimes to a movie theater, see a Marvel movie, and escape for 2 to 3 hours and have that be just big blockbuster entertainment. But it's different when we're dealing with like a long form TV show. There has to be more substance to the characters, to the stories, to kind of give it the richness it needs to be a 6-hour movie, right? And so I'm kind of happy to see that unfolding in the Falcon and Winter Soldier and really making Sam Wilson particularly his kind of focus as the larger subtext of why he does or does not want to step up as America's symbol, kind of bringing all that to the forefront. So I thought it was pretty cool. Charlie, you look like you have something to say. I know you do.
I mean, I just, you know, I could talk about this show for hours and hours. I think I really, really love what it's doing. You know, I think to your point, like Marvel, a lot of these movies have always had those themes and that subtext to them. They just haven't been at the forefront like they have been on these shows. You know, if you look through, like I said on the podcast on Friday, if you look through all of the Captain America movies to this point, you look at the story of Steve Rogers, it has always dealt with the idea of patriotism and loyalty and who he's supposed to be loyal to as Captain America. You know, the idea of this government that has constantly failed its people and this country that is supposed to stand for things but does not stand for them and then asks him to stand opposite those things. And him constantly, I mean, in the first movie, he was propaganda. In the second movie, you know, he quit his job and went on the run because he did not agree with what was happening because it stood against the actual freedom that they promised people. And then Civil War, obviously, with the Sokovia Accords and everything. And then now that story continues with Sam and Bucky. Sam being a Black man in America, having grown up feeling, you know, like he wasn't loved by his country and then treated more like a celebrity than an actual hero. And then Bucky, you know, dealing with the PTSD of his past, dealing with being a veteran that doesn't get the care that he needs. And like, it just, this is Steve Rogers' story, but amplified with characters that we know every day. You know, this isn't, Sam Wilson isn't a super soldier that was frozen in the ice for 100 years. Sam Wilson's a real person that you and I have met. And seeing his story kind of now, or Steve's story become his in that theme and like kind of in that subtext is really, really interesting. And, you know, the race stuff just comes so naturally because of not just the moment that we're in, but what our country has been since our country was a country. And, it, you know, the fact that they brought in Isaiah Bradley and actually are dealing with the real Isaiah Bradley story, I mean, it surprised me on such a deep level. I did not think they would go that far and really, really do that. And it seems like they are. And I mean, props to Malcolm Spellman and his team for not only convincing Marvel to do it, but like really just doing it. And not, I mean, Malcolm Spellman does not hold back at all. And I really, really appreciate that about this show.
So, okay. So one, I'm enjoying the show. And I'm glad, by the way, because I saw the Kofi notes in the layout. I'm glad that the question I asked in the first one ended up being true so far, where they actually dove into that stuff. Because Marvel movies and just in general, I would say superhero movies have a habit of acknowledging something is not the same as exploring it. And it's very surface in a lot of these movies. And even the MCU, it's some of the themes that they explore are very like, hey, they're there. And they don't go much further than that.
They don't go much further. You're absolutely right.
So, like, even Cap Story, who I love, like, I love those. Those are my favorite movies. Like that trilogy is by far, like, they're all up there in the top 10 of MCU movies. But that's why I was kind of like, okay, I want you to go further. And what I've also learned, just, you know, I mean, Kofi knows this is from talking to different creators. The reason why these themes are so relevant is because they never go away. These themes are the same things that have been around forever. Like if you don't notice them, you're just blind. So like it's more about just like they never go away as opposed to like, oh, it's really topical now. It's just always topical. So like it's nice to actually see someone acknowledge that and move things forward. Isaiah Bradley, that whole storyline in the comics and truth in general, like that whole thing is such an interesting like thing of like, wow, Marvel actually did that back in the books. And even then, you know, it was, there's issues, right? with the original series of like, maybe not going far enough or whatever. So like, I'm glad that they're exploring that here. I also do feel like not every movie is for everybody. Not every show is for everybody. So I will take that for WandaVision, right? WandaVision did not click with me, but that's okay. It didn't click with me. It clicked for a lot of other people. Cool. So the people who say like, oh, I don't want my politics or I don't want these things, I want to get away, then go to like the 98% of other things out there and get out of my toy box.
Well, I'm just I'm
okay. It's fine.
When people say that, I'm always like, my response is always, please, I need to know, like, explain to me how you spent years reading and watching Captain America, or better yet, the X-Men, and had no real thoughts in your head. And we're like, well, I'm just escaping. Like, you know, like Charlie just recounted, every single one of these Captain America movies, I mean, First Avenger might have been a little bit more bubblegum about it, but like Winter Soldier and Civil War are real serious about like everything from geopolitics to the view of politics and how hardline and, you know, it should be or not and all this stuff. So yeah, I never really get that argument. It just seems like when we touch on subjects you may not feel comfortable with or don't like the opinion of the storyteller, you're just like, we shouldn't touch on that is kind of how I feel about it.
Which is fine, by the way, to not, whether it makes you uncomfortable or whether you just don't like it. Cool. I'm not telling you what to feel about it. All I'm saying is don't shovel me that BS about like, oh, well, get it out of my, no, the universe is big. It can hold all of them. It should have a better balance of both. Leave it alone.
Absolutely. Right. Can I just say this? This is going to be I'm going to get roasted for this, but what I do like about the show is all of these touches on politics, racism within this, you know, system, the Avengers not getting paid. I didn't know that. I thought all of the Avengers were wealthy and getting paid by the government for saving the world. And I'm so glad to see people in the comments kind of feel the same way. Eugene says, you know, Falcon Winter Soldier just isn't grabbing me. And I feel that way. And I know it's, but I enjoy the storylines. I like the mental health. I love the relationship between the two of them. I love that they're touching on politics. It feels true to these characters. However, for me personally, I'm not as big of a fan of the show as I am WandaVision, because I'm into the witchcraft, the mysticism, I'm into sci-fi, and that's okay. I'm still watching it and I still like it a lot. It's just not my favorite, and that's okay. Like, not every show has to be your favorite. There's a lot of content out there for everybody to enjoy. And I think that was beautifully said, Matt, because if you are kind of struggling getting super into the show, you're not alone. I'm living for the action, but I'm not super invested yet, but I'm still holding out hope, because I'm happy to see these characters. I really am. And everything you guys said was just brilliant. Like, you said it beautifully, and it actually makes me want to go back and rewatch it and focus on those things a little bit more.
Well said, Janelle.
Yeah. Yay.
I think it's an interesting time for an African-American character to be kind of contemplating these all these things and his place in the national standing. And I think there are a lot of viewers who appreciate that inclusivity right about now. So I'm digging it. And if, yeah, this is not your show, I'll see you on the next go round, I guess, would be Loki. Peace out. All right, Matt, take us over to comics. What do we got this week?
Also, I apologize to Kofi. I was supposed to keep that tight, and I feel like I did the opposite of that and just like opened that up to a whole thing. So sorry about that. That's my bad. All right. So comics. I feel like we're gonna start here, because I'm already fired up. And in the voice, hear me speak now in the voice of Andy Samberg's Nicolas Cage. What the hell was that comic? like I want to be in that movie. Like, that is the tone of voice I need to have with Batman Catwoman number 4. I don't, this comic, like, as you know, we've been talking about this storyline for a minute here, and I would say the general demeanor of the first 3 issues was like, we liked them. We had issues with certain things and like how the timelines, and maybe is it a little too bloated, things like that. But overall, I think like most of the talk on this show anyway was pretty positive. I came away from this like, I had to go back and reread it to just make sure like I wasn't like missing key details and like things that happen. I just, this issue was just a mess for me. Like, I don't like saying that. It was a gorgeous mess, because this book is beautiful.
What a beautiful mess. What a beautiful mess. Oh man, we have to get singing in there. Really.
But like, this issue was kind of a mess for me, but I'm curious to hear, like, you know, Janelle, Kofi, what do you guys think?
I mean, I can just back you up and say, yeah, it was a damn mess. I stump for Tom King a lot, but yeah, this is just getting too crazy and convoluted. Like, we're sliding, I feel like, in scenes, I feel like we're sliding between timelines in the middle of scenes now. Like, well, there's like one panel with like Helena Wayne as Batman, and then it cuts to like present day Catwoman, like from there. And it's just like, I get that we're trying to see the kind of rippling effect of this stuff over time and these connections over the past, present, and future. But like, yeah, just, it's a chore just to read this and kind of, and keep straight, like where we are, what's going on. And with so many things on the board that should be epic, it just feels like King's style is defeating itself in this case. Like, whereas I love City of Bane because of how deep it went into each of these characters, like Batman, Catwoman, Alfred, even. It's just like, yeah, any one of these storylines would be rich enough to delve into. Phantasm coming back in the present and having, you know, getting in the way of Batman and Catwoman's relationship. That's an entire story. The reveal that Joker and Catwoman have some strange, weird quasi-relationship that started in the past, early days of Batman's career. That's a storyline. A future where Helena Wayne becomes Batman and her mother is trying to outfox her in an investigation into a murder is itself a comic series. All of these things happening at once just kind of feels like it's diluting the richness of these big Batman events that are just thrown together in this weird mix. And to make this larger point that I feel like is just getting swallowed up in all the smaller kind of, you know, in all the smaller parts. Like, I'm like, and it just gives you a little bit of what you want, and then it just kind of snatches it away too quick. Like, I wanted to see more of Helena kind of track this down and confronting people like Penguin and that whole thing playing out with where she leaves and then, you know, Selina comes out from the back and has that whole Penguin cat moment thing. Like, that stuff, I was like, whoa, like that made me sit up and be like, whoa, like that was intense. Like that could have been all of issue four, that whole thing. Just the investigation, finding Penguin, you know, confronting Penguin, her leaving, you know, the cliffhanger of Selina coming out and murdering Penguin. Like that would have been like a great issue.
That hurt my soul a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. I mean,
like, poor Penguin. Didn't do anything to anybody.
I know.
Oh, by the way, spoilers.
Yeah. And so like, but all this stuff together is just like, yeah, it's just swallowing itself up. It's swallowing up its own potential, and it's just a shame to see. Yeah.
Agreed. Janelle, what'd you think?
I'm just gonna confirm. I'm with you on all of this, both of you. Just a little confusing. Not my least favorite comic ever, but definitely, you know, having a hard time following. The art is definitely keeping me there on the page. I'm enjoying the artwork very much. Boy, can he draw eyes, lips, bodies. The women are stunning. Like,
there's that final scene, like towards the end, where like Batman's standing on that, I don't know what he's like, a gargoyle or whatever. And he's just like looking at the sky. It's like, shit, like it. There's so many moments, like picturesque moments is what I agree. But
yeah. And of, you know, this whole series, for me, this was the weakest book so far. And really hoping that it kind of gets a little bit more momentum on the next one. Again, I don't hate it, but it is. I have to be very, like, I don't have any music on in the background. I'm like reading, I'm focused. I'm giving it all of my attention to make sure that I'm not missing what's happening. But yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, I felt like I missed. I actually looked and was like, when did Selina get kidnapped? And like, I had to go back and like read. Yes. I had to go back. And I was like, when did that happen? I agree. I would be interested in this, if we ever actually get to talk to Tom King, because I feel like this is the most negative we've ever been about one of his books on the show. But like, love the stuff overall. But like, I'd be interested to see, because of course his original Batman run was supposed to be 100 issues. And this was presumably supposed to be part of that run after like City of Bane. And then of course, like they switched writers and then he got this chunk to kind of finish his story and things like that. So I'm kind of curious, like what got changed in between, if things got changed kind of to fit this new format. I would be interested to hear that. But moving on to Marvel. So we have a new debut in the house, Silk number one. For those who don't know, Cindy Moon is the star of Silk. And this was just a really, I mean, if you're not knowledgeable about that, there are a lot of spider characters in the Marvel universe. But I feel like most of them have all kind of found their own niche and developed their own personalities and kind of set themselves apart from each other, despite some of the overlapping spider powers. Cindy Moon is a fan favorite. I think this was a really fun, as opposed to Batman Catwoman. I didn't have to struggle to understand this book. It catches you up pretty quickly if you're not familiar with her origin story, which is kind of traumatic. Very traumatic, actually. It catches you up pretty quick within that first kind of five pages and gets you up to speed. And then you're out the door and it has just like a fun sense of humor. It's got a really, you know, stylized artistic style, but I dug it. And I think this is a really cool, I think for people who are new to the character, this is a perfect issue to jump on and just dive in and have fun. For those longtime fans who have been paying attention over the course of her other ongoing series, they get rewarded too with the J. Jonah Jameson stuff and, you know, references to her like being called Analog and things like that. So there's stuff for both. But what'd you think, Janelle?
Great. Loved it. Love to see an Asian American hero on the screen, or sorry, on the book on the screen. I forgot to mention this. One of the things I really loved about Invincible was the diversity within the cast. And so he also comes from, you know, an Asian American mom, I think is Korean, and, you know, a Caucasian father. And I think the representation is really beautiful. And for Silk, I just love her attitude. She's got like this like snappy little attitude. She seems intelligent, capable. I loved that she's like shooting out of her fingertips. I got all of that, being not having any, you know, background on her. And I got it. They covered it all. They showed off her skills. Her costume's awesome. I love that she's wearing the mask. Like, it's totally COVID safe, which is so funny. I mean, I just think it's great. I really, really enjoyed her. And, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to getting to know her backstory more. I loved her relationship with her brother, who, you know, I get that it comes from a strained background. She was in a bunker for 10 years. She likes to keep saying that so that everybody knows she's like driving it home. But they also talk about how like she had to save her brother. And I got all of that in this small book. So I think it's really good. Very excited to see where it goes. And yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Definitely of the two, that was my favorite.
Kofi?
I thought it was all right. I mean, Silk is a good character, and I think they are doing a good kind of female Spider-Man spin on this. She has the kind of quippy Peter Parker thing. She has Peter Parker's job, basically working for J. Jonah Jameson. And it's a very kind of classic Spider-Man from a more diverse female perspective, obviously, and dealing with different things and a more new age cast of characters like her brother, who is, I think I picked up his LGBTQ in this. Is he?
Plus, yes.
It's just kind of a modern take of Spider-Man using a more diverse character set. And that's not a bad thing. The changes in personality and things are enough to make the story kind of fresh and interesting. And just her dynamic with like dealing with J. Jonah Jameson's misogyny is like a different kind of way. And it's not heavy or preachy.
Yeah.
And they do a very good job. And I like the team they got is not, and they don't make it like a centerpiece. It's not like, I am an Asian character and I have all these Asian problems like on the first page. She just is a real character who happens to be from this background, and it does inform how she sees things, what her voice is. And I think they're doing a good job of making that character be a very lively, attachable character without stressing the social justice issues of it. Pretty well done. And like I said, it's kind of like almost jumping into a fresh start of classic Spider-Man stuff with this different character until you get to like the very end. And then there's like, you know, Korean themed demons and stuff like that, like walking around.
Yeah, that's
and, yeah, and then you're like, wait, what? Yeah,
it takes a swerve there. I agree with you. I feel like right now the current Amazing Spider-Man series is very much like classic kind of soap opera melodrama, which people there. I used to love that about the like 90s Spider-Man books. So it definitely has, you know, an audience of fans. But if you were kind of looking for something in the same vein that, you know, felt a little fresh, but also had more of the quippy, you know, banter filled Spider-Man style adventures, this is a perfect book for you. If, you know, that current, like Peter Parker Spidey isn't really clicking for you. So I feel like this would be something I would definitely recommend for those fans as well. Charlie, what did you think? Did you get to read Batman, Catwoman or Silk?
I didn't read Batman, Catwoman number 4 because I just haven't been into the first couple issues.
You're smart.
I mean, it's fine. Like, Tom King's always been someone who's very hit or miss for me. I think some of his things are just stunning and incredible, and some are not. And this has kind of been like right down the middle. And it's just, you know, I've read a lot of backlog comics now. I've been reading a lot of Falcon and Winter Soldier stuff, like reading a lot of weird, like Marvel Magic stuff from the past. And it just, you know, I didn't want to keep investing my time into it. It's fine, and I get why people like it, but it's not my thing. And unfortunately, I love having strong. I feel like I always have strong opinions about stuff. Both these, like, Silk is good. You know, like, yeah. I enjoy the character. I think the story that it's setting up here could be great, but it hasn't really done too much yet to get me really excited. But like, unlike Batman and Catwoman, like I am going to read another issue and like see how I feel going forward and see if it continues to hook me. But, you know, they're both, I'm it's weird to feel indifferent because I rarely feel Charlie's indifferent
thinking,
about things.
Charlie's saying you didn't pick any winners this week, Matt. How do you feel about that?
I mean, all the books I really loved this week were from Image. You know, Redneck's one of my favorite ongoing series maybe ever. And so Redneck had a new issue, and that's where I spent a lot of time this week, was over in Image stuff.
No, that's fine. That's good. And also, honestly, half the job of a comic is in 22 pages to hook you for the next issue. So if it managed to do that, then, you know, that's half the battle.
It's solid. It was solid.
Yeah, that's comics this week.
All right. Thank you, Matt. That's comics. Let's talk about a quick few mentions before we got out of here. Some of you have mentioned some stuff in the comments, so we'll just get to it. First of all, yes, My Hero Academia is back streaming on Funimation and Hulu for season 5. And that's pretty exciting. If you're also reading the manga version of that series, we may be looking at the end. Attack of Titan came to an end also, but we found out we're going to get another part of the story, thank God, because everybody was like, how are they going to end this series without, you know, finishing the manga? And now we'll know in 2022 we'll get a second half, so that's pretty exciting as well. Charlie, you'll love this. I wanted to mention that Solar Opposites is back on Hulu. That is the series from Justin Roiland, one of the co-creators of Rick and Morty. And Solar Opposites is great. I really just think they need to spin off this wall into its own show.
Like, it's so dark. And this season with the serial killer, like the whole Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I'm just getting like the third episode, but I love The Wall. And it's about a group of aliens who crash land on Earth and have been here and are trying to adapt to Earth culture and do so in some funny ways in America. But they keep a collection of people they shrink down in a big, almost like ant farm world against the little alien kids wall, and the wall is its own show. It has its own
the first episode. Season it was like you got little glimpses of people on the wall like throughout the series, and then the second to last episode it was entirely the wall, and it was like it was not funny like the rest of the show. I mean, the show's hilarious, but this it was not funny. It was like a full-on like, they were revolting against like
it was
the,
like a
the autocratic leader of the wall, like,
it was nuts.
It was a full-on like war post-apocalyptic story, and then this season it's all like a serial killer they're investigating. And Sterling K. Brown voices like the main wall character. It's so good. And it's so dark. It's so funny. It's so dark.
The show's really irreverent kind of commentary on American culture in particular from the viewpoint of these aliens. But then you just get these cutscenes inside the wall that are like Charlie's saying, like super serious. Like
the end of episode 2, I was like,
yeah.
It was so gross. Like, he's talking about gory with Invincible.
Yeah. Yeah, they do some pretty nasty stuff in the show. And the
Solar Opposites is a fantastic show.
Yeah, and I would watch a whole show about just the wall.
Oh, yeah.
It is great. So Solar Opposites back, and that's funny. Hulu, you can watch that. I'm watching this Cue Into the Storm series on HBO Max, this docuseries about – we don't get political in this show where that's not what we do. But it's not really even a political show. It's just about the crazy internet personalities – that were behind like 4chan and 8chan and leading to Q and all this stuff. And it's just about like the sadly bizarre people who are really behind all of this stuff that has taken over the world and become this huge thing leading to January 6th. And the people in the show are just these weird internet dudes. And it's so weird and sad at the same time. And like, yeah, it's crazy. So they release 2 episodes every week, Cue Into the Storm, HBO Max. Bad Trip is the Eric Andre movie. If you haven't seen that on Netflix with Tiffany Haddish and Lil Rel, it's basically like the Eric Andre Show movie version. They just get setups in stores and different places where they get to prank people and do these absurd pranks. And it's hilarious. And the overall premise is kind of Borat-ish. He fell in love with a girl that he saw from high school, and he is going across country to meet with her with Lil Rel. And Tiffany Haddish plays Lil Rel's sister who escapes from prison, and they take her car and she's trying to kill them. And they just freak normal people out in the best ways. If you haven't, it was number 1 on Netflix over the weekend. Bad Trip, if you haven't seen it.
Eric Andre is a out. Trip.
Eric I don't even like, I can only take Eric Andre in small doses, but in this, like, this is a great project for him because it lets him do what he does. And it's so effective. And the best is the credit scenes where you get to see the different like setups they had and how people really reacted after the scene when they had to basically go get the clearance signatures and then being like, hey, it's a prank. And like, and those parts are hilarious. And Snowfall, I got to plug Snowfall. Thank you, Eugene. Eugene said, Eric Andre said on Howard Stern that he got help from Sacha Baron Cohen to pull this off. So that makes a lot of sense. Snowfall. I got to say Snowfall is the most underrated American crime show since The Wire. No like awards you probably haven't heard from it, or you're one of those people's like, oh, I've been meaning to watch that, you know. But Snowfall's coming back for season 5, and man, this show is so good. And if you don't know what it's about,
Damson Idris, right?
Yeah Damson Idris. And it's about the Iran, kind of the whole Iran-Contra affair, and how the U.S. was, you know, backing Contras and bringing drugs into the U.S., cocaine by the kilos during the fight against the Red Scare, or down the communists in the 80s and the Soviet Union, and how that led to cocaine getting into the inner city and becoming crack and becoming the crack epidemic, and all the kind of criminal players and CIA people who were involved in all that. And it's it just gets better with time, and the cast is fantastic. And it, like I said, best American crime drama show since The Wire, and just as criminally
unrecognized. If y'all watch Narcos and you liked Narcos, you need to watch Snowfall.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, awesome show. Yeah, and so those are just mentions. Anybody else have anything they want to mention before we get out of here?
Sarah, Mighty Ducks Game Changers. Mighty Ducks Game Changers on Disney Plus is so good. I was so shocked by how much I like this show. It's very Cobra Kai, but for Mighty Ducks.
I can't wait to watch this. I'm season 3, episode 9 on Cobra Kai right now, and I'm addicted. And I'm
so
like,
it's that, but for Mighty Ducks. It's new kids. This grizzled old guy who doesn't like hockey anymore, and you don't really know why. And Lauren Graham is like the greatest TV mom ever. I mean, she always has been, but like she's perfect for this. It just, and the kids in it are so, so, so funny and so talented. One of the main kids from Good Boys with the kid from Room was in it. But one of the kids from Good Boys is the main character of the show. And it's hilarious and heartwarming. And it's a really, like, it makes you feel like those 90s sports movies. It's awesome. I love Mighty Ducks Game Changers.
All right. Anybody else? We good? All right. Good. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for watching with us live on Twitch, Facebook, or YouTube, where you can catch us every Wednesday at 12 noon Eastern. If you are just getting the show and you want to just download and listen, we are on all your podcast platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast. If you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars. If you want to hang out and talk with us, we have the @ComicBookNation Twitter account. Or you can follow us individually. I'm @KofiOutlaw.
I am @MattAguilarCB.
I'm @JanelleWheeler.
And I'm @CharlieRidgely.
If you missed our last show, we talked to Joe Manganiello about the future of Zack Snyder's Snyderverse. Be sure to check that out, because that was an epic moment, milestone. And yeah, I don't know if we'll ever do much better than that. But
I've never seen Kofi smile more in one episode of the show.
Have you seen Joe Manganiello?
He's pretty spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, he came in leopard print with a wolf picture behind him. Like, I can't out alpha that man. Like, there's no out alpha-ing that man. Like, who wins a Godzilla versus Kong? Was Joe Manganiello in a leopard shirt in that fight? Because I don't know. But anyway, we're getting off track now. This has been Comic Book Nation. Thank you guys for listening in. We will see you next week. Peace.
Bye, guys.